Welcome to another edition of Keller City Limits, the podcast covering everything Keller, from politics, sports, and anything in between. Your host for the broadcast, Doug Miller.
You're too small to play ball, Coach Jackson used to scream. He said I'd never make the team, but I didn't give up on that dream.
Hello, everybody. This is Doug Miller, and welcome to Keller City Limits, episode number 4. In this episode, we had the opportunity to sit down with Keller ISD Athletic Director Bob DeYoung. We covered topics from the upcoming bond election to whether Keller High School is changing their mascot to the Knights. I hope you enjoy the podcast and be sure to check back soon as we have more shows lined up. And please, if you have an idea for a show or somebody to interview, email me at doug@kellercitylimits.com. And don't forget to visit kellercitylimits.com for updates about Keller politics, events, and high school sports. Okay, we're sitting here with Keller ISD Athletic Director Bob DeYoung on a cloudy morning in October. Bob, I want to tell you how much we appreciate you sitting down with us today. For those that are new to Keller, and you and I both know we have a huge population of newcomers in the last few years. Yeah. Can you give us some of your history and how long you've been with the district and where you were before you came to the district?
I'd be happy to. This is my 28th year in education, and the first 11 years were spent in Texarkana, where my wife grew up. And I taught school and coached at a middle school there for 3 years, and then at a place called Liberty Isle High School for 8 years. And then we began looking for a place to raise our kids. And we have some relatives that live in Trophy Club. So we would visit them, and we noticed Keller, the city of Keller, and Keller ISD, and we really were attracted to it. So we moved here 18 years ago and have been here ever since. I started off as a science teacher teaching chemistry and physics and a department head at Keller High and being an assistant football coach and assistant track coach at Keller High, and did that for 8 years. And after those 8 years, I turned into a curriculum person. I call it a curriculum facilitator for about a year, and then I became the secondary director of secondary curriculum for about a year and a half. But I always stayed close to athletics. I love athletics, and they allowed me, my bosses allowed me to keep a close touch on the athletic programs in the district. And when the job came open, I applied for it, and I was rewarded with what is my dream job, is being the AD here in Keller. And this marks the 8th year of myself being in that position.
You mentioned Texarkana. When we talked before the interview started, I mentioned I was a military brat.
Yeah.
I attended part of my senior year of high school. I attended at New Boston.
Yeah.
And it was the year that they went on to win the state championship in football.
Yeah, they're about 20 miles away from Texarkana.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the stadium bond. Give us a little bit of history. How long this has been discussed here at the district, and I know that there's been previous attempts to get it on a bond.
Right. You know, I'll go back a little, even a little bit further than that. When I guess right before when I came to Keller, and probably right around time you were coming to Keller, they were considering building a stadium that was going to be a mini version, from what I understand, of a Pennington Field. That didn't happen. I really don't know why it didn't happen, but it just didn't occur. And then a few years later, opening in, I think, the 92-93 school year, we opened what was the Keller Stadium, the unimproved version of it. And it seated about 5,000 folks and served us very well over the course of those years. And then we were able to get a bond passed, and we were able to do some improvements that we'll talk more about in a minute. Yeah, and I think we've progressed to a district that's been growing so rapidly in trying to meet the needs of our community, both with new campuses and campus improvements and what to do with our extracurricular facilities and how to continue allowing them to grow. And so back in 04, I believe it was, we were considering whether or not in that last bond to actually have a new stadium in it. And I think it was decided at that point that it might be better to wait until we had that fourth high school coming online, and just move forward with the renovation of the existing stadium, which you see in front of us today. In our most recent discussion of the topic in the community and with the board, and also with our Citizens Bond Advisory Committees, they thought it would be appropriate to ask our voters if they would see the merits of having a second stadium in the district to serve four high schools.
You touched on the renovation of the existing stadium over at Keller High School. Tell us how that went about, what we've added, sure. The amenities, the seating.
Well, like I mentioned before, the initial version of that stadium seated about 5,000 people, and that will serve us well for some of our games. But when we have our rivalry games, and if we're going to play if we're doing well in football that year, we're going to attract anywhere from 7 to 8, maybe even 9,000 people to the stadium on any given Thursday or Friday night. So we were having a lot of people that were standing or not able to find seats and sitting under the concourse kind of trying to watch the game. We decided that there's merit in expansion in the stadium. So what we did, we added about 2,500 seats to the old facility, getting us to about 7,500. We knew that when we began adding seats, it would kick in other things. First and foremost was going to be the ADA, because we were woefully short as far as meeting accessibility requirements for today's standards. We met the standards of 91-92, but we didn't improve along the way. So we had to do a lot of work to improve our ADA accessibility for restrooms, for seating, and for getting up into the stands. We added two new dressing rooms for the purpose of whenever we'd have a visiting team come to the stadium to play, or Fossil Ridge Central, they would have to dress in Keller High School's JV or varsity dressing areas, which meant that if Keller High was playing somewhere else, when Keller High came home, if it were a long home game to the Fossil Ridge Central game, there was nowhere for the Keller kids to go when they returned back from their game because Fossil Ridge Central were occupying those dressing rooms. So we built two dressing rooms that were designed for Fossil Ridge and Central and then any visiting opponent that we have. And that way, Keller High has its dressing rooms and so do the teams that are visiting that campus. In addition to the additional seating and the dressing areas, we improved our concessions primarily on the home side to accommodate the additional seating. We erected a press box, which we view as really a very nice workspace. And you've been up in it before, so you can see that it's not loaded with amenities, but it's loaded with the things that working environment necessitates. And that's the two teams that are playing, their coaches, the scouts that attend the game, several members of the media. It may be print media, it could be television media, or it could also be radio or internet broadcasting media. And then we have a community room that we use for VIP guests. An example of that would be either our school board, or it could be like this coming Friday night, Armed Forces Night, when we're going to invite, we have three Medal of Honor winners that are going to be our guests, and they'll be up there that night watching the game from the press box.
The other night, Keller played Central at the new stadium,
right,
or the remodeled stadium.
Right.
You still had to bring in some extra seating for that game.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that, and I think with every project that we do, you always learn something, but when you have a stadium that seats 7,500, which is what that design was going to seat, you also have to take into account that when your band and your drill team sit up in the stands, they will occupy at least two, if not three, seats for every one kid because of their instruments or just the way they sit when how they're going to perform during the game. So we talked to our bond advisory committee, we talked to our school board, and we talked to the city leadership about, We're really not seating 7,500 fans. We're seating several hundred less because of how we situate our bands and drill teams in the seats. So both sides approved the additional bleachers of about 500 to go on the visitor side, to go right in front of the existing bleachers, which will get us to an actual real count of around 7,500, allowing the bands and drill teams to sit as they normally do on the home and the visitor side. Now, those that you see there are temporary. There are some on order that will replace those. That'll be more of a permanent fixture in that location.
So the new stadium that's on the current ballot.
Right.
Tell us what it actually is compared to what we see over here at Keller High School.
It will be a clone of what you see at Keller High, with a couple of exceptions. Building a modern facility will probably make it look a little bit different, but the seating capacity will be identical. the size of the press box will be the same. We'll probably balance the seating a little bit more on the home and visitor side to allow for the rivalry games to have more balanced seating. The configuration of our existing stadium really didn't allow us to do that because it was already tremendously imbalanced from the first rendition of it, so it was hard to overcome that. But we will be able to have more balanced seating if we are able to pass the new stadium. But it'll have the same type of things. It'll have the same concession areas, the same type of press box. It'll have the same basic seating capacity, the same ADA requirements. It'll have local parking. The actual stadium site is on the 4th High School campus, and that land's already allocated. If the bond doesn't pass, it will be a stadium just like what Central and Fossil Ridge have, the JV-type stadium. If the bond does pass, the footprint will go right there, right on that where that JV stadium would have been. And there's already a parking plan in place should the bond pass.
Say the bond doesn't pass this go-round. The school district spends the money to build the JV-type stadium that we see at Fossil and Central. If the school board decides to try again for the stadium, will the stadium be able to go straight back onto that footprint that is allocated?
What the discussion would be, and you know that could be anywhere from 1 to 6 years ahead of where you and I are talking right now. If the bond isn't successful in November, the idea would be that you whatever you built there serve as a junior varsity ninth grade type of facility. You would build it so the additional seating and concessions and press box could go right on top of all that. That way it wouldn't require you to buy additional land to put a stadium somewhere else.
Why is the stadium needed?
Well, I think that you have to look at a couple of things. I think we've presented this option to the Keller ISD voters for these reasons. Number one, is it possible to have four games or four schools use one stadium? I think it probably is possible. I mean, it's probably been done before. The fact that the existing stadium is on a campus, if we have all four schools using the Keller High School campus every week during the fall, it precludes any other Keller High School activity to occur on any weekend, any Thursday or Friday during the fall season. I talked to the fine arts director at Keller High every year about, are there any open dates on Thursdays or Fridays for us to have one-act plays and to have things for their choirs? And there really aren't, because the parking lots are being used, facilities being used. I think another reason, there's a difficulty after a Thursday night game about getting that large population of kids back to school on a Friday morning and having them be ready to be academically ready to go to work. We talked yesterday at an athletic director meeting, and there are as many as 1,000 kids or more, well, probably a couple thousand kids that are either actively participating or watching those games.
Or running underneath the bleachers.
So what we're saying is that they might be there until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. They get home, they go to bed at midnight, and I don't know that that's the best mousetrap we have for kids attending school on a Friday. So that's a second reason.
One of the things that the people that oppose the new stadium bring up is, you know, there's 9-10 football games a year, but mm-hmm. You and I both know that a stadium's used more than just for home football games. What other uses throughout the school year and maybe even in the summer are those facilities used for?
You know, Doug, it's been an incredible learning experience for us. So we'll talk about two things here, stadium use and also when the turf went down, how that changed the current facility to what it is today. When Keller High School's stadium was a grass field, it typically had a few dozen uses per year. It would have the Friday night football games. It would have some JV football games. And it would have a Keller High School's home soccer schedule. And that would be it beyond a couple of track meets, because the natural turf would wear down so quickly it ended up being a borderline unsafe surface to play on. So when we were fortunate enough to put turf on that field, we have seen that it is a daily used facility. So every single day during the school year, there are different programs and teams that use those. In addition to football, we have the soccer team, we have the track teams. When it's a wet day, we have our baseball and softball kids that are out there. regularly we have the bands and the drill teams and the cheerleaders that are out there practicing. Several weekends a year, KYA uses the facility on Saturdays and Sundays for their games. Our facilities director leases that facility several times a year for semi-pro football teams. So there are several hundred events that take place every year, and only really a handful of those are our football games. And we have been able to expand as far as the football and middle school soccer go. We have our middle school football games are out there at least once a year for every school, and we have middle school soccer there at least once a year for every school, so kids can experience what it's like to play on turf or to play in a nice stadium, to give those middle school kids an idea of what lies ahead for them as it goes on. So we've gone from 36 uses per year to at least a few hundred uses per year, having the stadium there and also the turf to play on.
Maybe this is something that the district hasn't decided, but if the bond passes and the stadium's built, we'll have four high schools. What schools will use what stadiums?
You know, we've had some brief discussions, but that hasn't been decided yet. I think we'll have to look at schools' preferences, community locations, things like that. So that won't be determined until sometime well after the bond decision is made.
Moving on from the stadium, there's always been a huge amount of questions I've always wanted to ask you, but every time I see you at a football game or a baseball game, you're always real busy, and I can't just pull you aside. One of the questions has to do with the growth that we currently have. A new high school is going to be open next year, and you touched on the fact that the first couple of years or the first year it's going to be a 9th and 10th grade facility. Mm-hmm. How long before do you project before all four schools are going to become 5A?
If we can look at Central as a model. Now, when Central opened, we were still a very fast growth district, and we have slowed a little bit due to the economy and our build out is approaching. But when Central High School opened, it opened as a 9-10 the first year. The second year, with three grades, it began their varsity schedule, and they were assigned a 4A league. So for 2 years, they played in a 4A district. And when realignment occurred after those 2 years, they bumped up to 5A in their second realignment, 4A for 2 years and then 5A since then.
But also with the boundaries being redrawn at that time, Fossil dropped down to 4A, did they not?
They did, and because it was partially boundaries being redrawn, and it was because of that, the students that were attending Fossil Ridge ended up helping us open Central High School. So then Fossil has to regrow with their newly assigned boundaries, and they are slowly growing. Looking forward to the new school, I would think that for first year will be 9 and 10. We'll be assigned a 4A district in the second year. We'll play varsity. We'll be 4A for at least 2 years. And if we continue to slow our growth in the district, that may be a 4A school for up to 4 years, depending on how our growth goes. But I think in no more than 4 years after opening, we'll have 4 or 5A schools in the district, and we'll maintain that for the life of the district.
One of the questions every sports fan, a high school sports fan, has: can Keller ISD compete with the dilution of talent and compete against other schools like Carroll, where they have a high school and a senior high?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good question. I think that the decision on how to build schools is different for every community. We knew for a long time in this district, and I'm not a demographer nor am I a budget person, but we know that our struggle with finding enough money, whether it be budget or bond, was all focused on building schools to meet that rapid growth that we were experiencing. We were growing at 2,000 kids per year for a long time. We decided on the 1,000 student middle school model, a little smaller for an intermediate model, and a 5A model for our high schools. Which is probably a very typical model across the state in these fast growth districts. When you look at the success that a district like Carroll has, their decision to have one high school was based on a couple of factors. One, they liked the success they were having academically and athletically and extracurriculars, but they weren't ever going to have the population that would necessitate having two large 4A schools, or even close to having two 5A schools. their population of students, grades 9 through 12, is still smaller than Keller High and Central High are today, a little bit bigger than what Fossil Ridge is today. And they're really, they're pretty much done growing over there in Carroll. So if I'm going to project what I think they were thinking, I think they thought that we're never going to be two real big 4A's or two small 5A's. So if we want our continued success, we want to keep this one high school model. And they decided the 9-10 school was their mousetrap to do that. But there are no more kids in grades 9 through 12 at Carroll High School than there are at Keller or Central. The dilution of talent is a difficult question, because we know that when we open a school, it will draw some students from our existing schools. In the past, it's been predominantly one. When we opened Fossil Ridge, it drew from Keller. And we went down to 4A for a couple of years, and Keller did. When we opened Central, it primarily drew from Fossil. So Fossil went down for a couple of years. I don't think when we open this new school, we're going to have any of our 3-5A schools drop down a class, because we have enough students in these schools to maintain that 5A population. With that being said, the reality is that it does take a couple of years to regroup your numbers and extracurricular activities. It does take anywhere from 2 to 4 or 5 years to have a new school get its programs online where they're being competitive. But really and truly, if we're talking about measuring success, and that's kind of where this question was leading to, is I really think there are dozens of ways to measure success, and one of them is when that ring goes on your finger and you call yourself a state champion. And Carroll's been outstanding at accumulating state championship teams in a lot of different programs. However, what goes unnoticed a lot is the success that we're having in this district. We had, I guess, around 3 dozen teams that were playoff caliber teams last year across the district, which is the most we've ever had, if my records are correct. We had over 6,000 boys and girls that were in athletics in grades 7 through 12, and we're real proud of our ability to track numbers of kids in our programs, and because that shows that we are welcoming these kids in our programs, and the fact that they're staying shows that there's good things happening. Now, do we look for success? Yes, I think one of the things that my assistant Becky and I do, and our principals do, is we help mentor our head coaches and our directors to ensure that we're having program growth. And the indicators of program growth are, number one, are your numbers. Number two, is your staff maintaining its integrity, or are you having to hire new coaches all the time? And number three, what's your success? You know, is your varsity program getting better year in, year out? If not, what are the reasons for that? But I think that the lion's share of our programs are experiencing that kind of success.
But there is a lack of, you know, we drive east on 1709, yeah. and right there, I mean, basically at our border where Carroll High School is, they have their billboard, and they've run out of room for state champions. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that in our district. We've seen, you know, some individual state champions in wrestling. You know, I think our most recent team state championship is Keller High School girls softball, yeah. That won 2 out of 3 years in a national championship. But there doesn't seem to be that level of state championships here in Keller, and we're just a couple miles west.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what ingredient that school district may have that others don't. Is it okay for us to compare Keller ISD to Carroll ISD? Sure it is. But when you compare Carroll to the rest of the state,
right,
everybody's saying the exact same thing. Now, I think you have to continually look at yourself and say, are we doing everything we can to have the success that we desire to have? And one of those things, and you're right, one of those things is district championships and regional championships and in the end, state championships. So those are goals, but those aren't switches you can flip on. Those are things that have to be developed over time. I think that once our schools are built and our growth is regulated and we have consistency in our boundaries and things like that, we'll see a continued improvement in our successful programs. But I do really believe that if you compared our district and our three schools to our neighbors in addition to Carroll, to the Grapevines and the HEBs and the Birdvilles and the Northwests and the Mansfields, you would still be compared very favorably with our athletic and our extracurricular
success. It's kind of almost unfair that Carroll's right next door. I mean, because, I mean, they had success. They moved from 3A to 4A and instantly had success. They went from 4A to 5A and instantly had success. And not just in football. You know, my son was a baseball player, and, and at the time that he was a varsity baseball player, Carroll was in our district. And it wasn't just football that they had success in. It was baseball, it was track, it was debate, it was everything.
And you know, and I think that's a good point, but I'll tell you this, though, that our program directors, our head coaches, and our extracurricular directors, to a man and a woman, we don't shy away from... We don't have any desire to wish that we weren't next-door neighbors to Carroll ISD, because when you have success that close to you, it should serve as a motivational tool for you. If they can do it, I want to do it too. So we relish the opportunity to compete against schools like that, against Trinity High School with their football program, and anybody else who has the best of the best, because we want that same title, that same philosophy in our district. The fact that we're hungry is a good sign. And our coaches desperately want to be part of that ultimate level of success. And, you know, I can assure the Keller community that we've got over 240 coaches that are working toward that end. And are we going to be there tomorrow? Probably not. But we love the fact that we're neighbors with those guys, because that's a good goal for us to have.
What do you think? Well, I guess maybe you could explain the process of redistricting. You know, we saw that Southlake moved in and out of our district, and we had Trinity move in. From a baseball dad, you know, 5A is, if not the strongest district in baseball, was one of the strongest districts in baseball, to where the teams, when they went out and played a district opponent, not only were they just playing a district game, it was one of the better teams in the state.
They were playing a playoff
team. Basically every time that they went out. There's a fondness in Keller, especially within the city limits of Keller, of staying in 5A. Keller ISD have any control over that, or is that up to the powers that be in Austin?
Well, I'll tell you how that works. Every 2 years, in October, there's what they call a snapshot date. And your school's population, our three schools, Keller, Fossil, Central, will turn in their population to the state. And that population is put in a rank with all the other schools in the state. And the UIL decides how many schools there are going to be in 5A, 4A, 3A, 2A, and down to 1A. And the fact that we have three schools in our district, soon to be four schools in our district, they're all going to be 5A someday, they will keep those district schools together. Our Keller ISD schools will remain in the same district as we move through perpetuity. When our fourth school becomes a 5A, it will join the ranks of our three existing 5A schools. The reason that we gain and lose Carroll every couple of years is because they're a singleton. They are easily taken out or put in to make a district have an even number of teams, a 6-team district or an 8-team district. And then once in a while they get stuck in a 7 because there just aren't enough teams to go around. When you look at local districts, we're going to have 4. Birdville's got 3. Northwest is going to have 2 starting next year. So those are easy to group together in groups of 6 or 8. And when you have odd numbers, they'll singleton districts like Carroll is. And who else would be an example of that? Weatherford, things like schools like that, they're going to be the ones that are taken to fill in to make that even team. So do we have a say-so in any of that? No, it's all based on our population. We do know that we'll stay together. Keller ISD will.
But to have that 5A designation is nothing that we can control in Keller. They're going to just assign us to whatever district that they decide.
Now, we've been District 5 for a long time, and then teams have come and gone in and out of that, but Keller ISD has been a 5-5A school. But next realignment, we could be 4-5A, 6-5A, any of those. But, you know, I think we're always going to have the connection with the Grapevine and the Colleyville. We're going to have Carroll in there at least every other realignment, I think, and then mix in the Birdville schools and the HEB schools on top of that.
Since I moved here almost 10 years ago, there's been a rumor that Keller High School was going to change their mascot from the Indians to the Knights. And I still hear it. I still go to football games or baseball games, or even I went to a volleyball match the other night, and it was mentioned there. Yeah. Is there any truth to that rumor?
You know, I think that's one of the best rumors around, because it's a rumor that won't go away. I think from what I understand, there are two things to that. Number one, people wonder, because of the NCAA, they're taking the Indian mascots out of some of those college teams. But there's been no movement in high school athletics or extracurriculars to do a similar thing, unless you are promoting, I guess, inappropriate things toward, you know, American Indians. And I think that the way that Keller ISD does it is it's an honoring of that of those people, not a mockery or not assigning a savagery to it. So there has been no movement in the district other than that typical question about, you know, are we going to have to change for that reason? And the second reason is from what I understand, talking to a local athletic supplier, is that there is a team or an organization that is the Keller Knights, or that's been talked about. And I think when they got an order for T-shirts or equipment, then there was a misconception that, hey, this might be for Keller High School, that might change to the Knights. But there's not even a 0.1% hint that there'd be any change to go away from being the traditional Keller Indians to anything but that.
But in the last few years, we've seen that they have quit using the TPs at the games. Mm-hmm. You know, I think even before my time, or maybe no, I believe since I've moved into town, they had the cannon and were using it.
Yeah.
But there's been some moving away from some of the traditions at Keller High School.
The cannon, we would love to use the cannon, but you can't have pyrotechnics at a football game. You could display it, but you can't use it. You know, when UT kicks off, you hear the cannon go off. When in high school athletics in Texas, you can't do that. You could back before I moved here, and probably around the time that you came, that was still something that was used. The teepee, we used it prior to me coming to Keller, and then in my coaching tenure at Keller, we used the teepee as a symbol of we would. It was like the helmets the kids run out of now, the tunnels. It was Keller High School's tunnel to run out of. And in establishing a new tradition, the Keller High School coaches of today decided they wanted a new tradition or a new way of doing things to put their stamp on what it was. So the teepee went away, and there are other traditions that are being started to try to cultivate still being a Keller Indian. So it's not, there's no intent of moving away from the Keller Indian kind of a motto or mascot. It's just a different way of going about it.
I mentioned it, and you know that my son played baseball for Coach Stramp here for 4 years. Monday, I attended their golf tournament, one of their two fundraisers that they're allowed by the district to have. The Keller baseball team, which I'm familiar with, so I'll speak to that because I don't know how other teams in the district operate. They have to raise a huge amount of money to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars in order to do the things that need to be done, because the district isn't funding baseball to the point that they can say, okay, we got a check from Bob, sent us over a check, we can do what we need to do.
Right.
It is, and I think it's a misnomer on some of the taxpaying citizens in this town that think that their taxes are going to pay to fully fund some of these sports that are happening. I know that isn't true with baseball. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit, about how much the district funds each sport?
The district allocates X amount of dollars every year to the athletic budget, and then one also to the fine arts budget. Those are campus based, the fine arts. But the athletic budget is based out of my office here. We kind of compare notes with local districts and see how they're funding. So we're on the same page with the Grapevines and the Colleyvilles and the Carrolls and the Northwest for how we budget. And we budget every year a supply amount, which buys general equipment. We budget every year to pay for all of their officials, for those that call their games, no matter what sport it is. We budget for their travel. They're in their
district travel.
Their district travel, And the non-district travel does, if they go to a tournament and they spend the night somewhere, that's what they use their fundraising mechanisms to fund the hotels and travel for an overnight in-state or out-of-state trip. But anything that's not overnight, the district funds all those things.
So like that Keller baseball team every year goes to Georgetown and has for years.
Right.
That is one of the goals of fundraising is to pay for the bus down there and the kids right. that spend the night down there. The district doesn't pick up that tab.
Right. And we have, most of our sport teams do choose to have an overnight, and every one of those are funded by their fundraising efforts. They don't have to go overnight, but a lot of our coaches see it as a place to do some team building, to really have an extended time with the players to get to know them better, and the kids get to know the coaches better, and also to experience what it's like to play away from the home base. That way, when you do go to the playoffs, you're used to staying in a hotel. You're used to get up in the morning and having to get ready for a game away from your home. So there's a lot of value to an overnight trip. But like we talked about, those are all funded by the individual coaches and their fundraising mechanisms. But I do think we have well over $1 million budget in athletics that funds all those programs for those 6,000 kids in athletics. We wish we could fund more. We sure do. But, you know, this year we had a $4.9 million shortfall. So to ask for a huge increase in athletic spending, I don't know how appropriate that would have been, since we're having to tighten our belts in other areas too.
Well, Bob, I appreciate you sitting down with us today, and it's been a great interview, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Very good. Doug, I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
There was a question I had on the list that I forgot to ask Bob, and that was about Todd Dodge of South Lake Carroll UNT fame and how he used to coach for the district. I was wanting a comment from Bob on Coach Dodge's success after leaving. I sent an email off to Bob asking him for that comment, and I'll sure to be posted up on the website when I get it. I would like to again thank Bob DeYoung for his time. I also like to thank Shelley Johnson, the Director of Communications of KISD, for allowing the interview to take place, and for you for taking time to listen. The intro music for the podcast comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network. The song is entitled Don't Listen and was written by David Kraut. You can hear more of David's music at his website, davidkraut.com. The outro music is an old bluegrass song written by Jimmy Martin. It is covered by my little brother Devin's band, The Dead or Alives. Devin tells me that Jimmy Martin and he would sit and drink beer and talk women and hunting, of all things, in the months leading up to Jimmy's passing away in 2005. If you've ever heard the original version of this song, you'll see that they cover it in quite a unique way. You can find more of Dead or Alive's music at their MySpace page at myspace.com, Dead or Alive's. Beware, though, some of it isn't work or kid-friendly.
With all the things I know, I learned the hard way. I didn't hear the judge or plea.